Hello, this is Gideon Lovstein, and this is a responsive day for the 16th of Adar. And this is a responsive from Shut Heichal Yitzchak from Chivot by Rav Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog, the chief rabbi of Israel, at the time of the declaration of independence of the state. This is from Orach Chaim Simon Samach Dalet from the Orach Chaim section, the 64th responsive. And he is responding to a Rav Yaakov Kellum. Rav Yaakov Kellum tells us that he was formerly the chief rabbi of Moscow, and then he moved to Israel, and he became a member of the chief rabbinic council in Eretz Yisrael. And so in the 16th of Adar, he and Tafshin Tet in 1949 is writing to Rav Herzog about the Purim of Prazim, of open wall, of open city people. Right, this is the third day in a row we're doing Purim missions. I think it's the last day, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, it is. Tomorrow is going to be a tshuva from Rav Moshe about brain death and doctors and their actions on Shabbos and whatever we get to in that. But one last venture into Purim issues. Rav Kellum's, and wrote to, and we've seen Rav Kellum's before in another tshuva that I wrote up on TorahMusings.com. So if you Google that, you can find it. But his name came up in another, not the, another responsive of his, but his name came up in a responsive. So he wrote to Rav Herzog, and he had said he doesn't understand, basically, I mean, it's a very brief, his version is very brief. You don't understand why the new city of Jerusalem, let's remember, the new city of Jerusalem is not a walled city. Everybody agrees it's not a walled city. It's only not a walled city for the time of Yeshua ben Nun because it didn't exist until fairly recently. It's the new city. It was really built when Jews, in the last, 150 years, when Jews started coming back to Yerushalayim, and the old city was crowded, and living with inside the walls was a problem, and had disease issues. So they started building outside the walls and living there. So they would, when the reason that they celebrate Purim on the 15th of Adar is that the halacha of the walled city celebrating the 15th of Adar, it doesn't apply only to the walled cities, it also applies to Kol HaSamuch and Kol HaNireh, anything which is close to the walled city and anything which sees the walled city. And that gets into a lot of questions about what's considered close, what's considered seen with, but certainly the new city of Yerushalayim counts, right? Now, the reason the question arisen in particular in the year 1949 was that sadly during the War of Independence, the old city of Yerushalayim had been conquered, and all the Jews from within had been expelled, had been sent out, and some had been taken to captives, some had been taken, had gotten back to the rest of the Jewish settlement, but there were no more Jews in the old city. And there's a halacha that Rav Herzog is going to talk about in his response that Rav Kellum doesn't really bring up, but there's a halacha that he doesn't bring up directly. He refers to it, but the halacha seems to be, that if you have a city, a walled city, but it's all non-Jews, then a Jew who goes into that city would read on the 15th, but the halacha of Kol HaNireh, the people who are, the settlements that are near enough to see that walled city, or that are close to that walled city, would no longer have the halacha of reading it on the 15th. So apparently, from this tshuva, we find out that in 1949, before Purim, there was a big question as to when the new city of Yerushalayim should celebrate Purim, and they eventually ruled, according to following Rav Pesach Frank, who some of whose tshuva we saw back on the 14th of Adar. If you haven't heard that tshuva yet, you can go back and see some of it, but he has a whole series of tshuva on these questions, and he apparently had ruled that no, the Jews would keep it on the 15th. So this Rav Kellum is writing to Rav Herzog and saying he doesn't understand a lot of the fuss, because he points out that outside of Israel, you have walled cities, as we saw in yesterday's show, we were talking about Prague, and people assumed that Prague might be a walled city, and therefore there were those who had the custom to read the Megillah on both days. But Rav Kellum says that that halacha of Kol HaNireh v'Kol HaSamuch Nisma, Kol HaSamuch v'Kol HaNireh, that anything that's close or is seen, people always assume that that would apply outside of Israel too. And outside of Israel, it's majority or completely Akum, majority completely non-Jewish. And yet nobody thinks to say that the Kol HaNireh v'Kol HaNisma have to read on the 14th, that it doesn't count the Kol HaNireh v'Kol HaSamuch, that it doesn't count for what's close or what's seen with it. So there's no reason to think that a city in Israel, Yerushalayim, would be worse than, just because it lost its Jews, would be worse than a city outside of Israel. That's where Yaakov Kellum's had argued. Now, if Herzog isn't going to directly answer that claim, he's going to go through that sugya and talk about whether or not this idea of losing Jews within a walled city makes it no longer a walled city for the question of the people around it being expected to read Megillah on the 15th. And Rav Herzog's response was written on the 16th of Adar of Tafshin Tet. So this is right after Purim. It's Orach Chaim Simon Samach Hay. Okay, so he's writing back to Rabbi Yaakov Kelems, and he says, when I paskined, I relied as Hillel HaZaken did. So this is a Gemara in Pesachim Daf Samach Vav. I'm going to take a minute on it because I find it really interesting Gemara, and he brings it up, refers to it, has brought it up, so he gives me the opening to talk about it. And he says, just like Hillel did it, I'm no better than Hillel. What Hillel did was he relied on the practice of the Jewish people. Now, that's an interesting claim by Rav Herzog, because if you look in the Gemara in Pesachim and Daf Samach Vav of Nalev, here's the story. It's a long story. I will do it relatively briefly, but the Gemara says that they have a tradition that there's a halacha. The halacha of whether you could offer the Korban Pesach on the 14th, if the 14th was Shabbat, was forgotten by B'nai B'Teira. Around the time that Hillel was moving up in the world and becoming the leader of the generation, the leaders until then were the B'nai B'Teira. And the B'nai B'Teira forgot whether when the 14th happens on Shabbat, you're allowed to offer the Korban Pesach. It's a violation of Shabbat to offer a sacrifice on Shabbat unless that sacrifice is specifically required to be offered on Shabbat. It's allowed to be offered on Shabbat. And the question was, the Pesach, Korban Pesach, count for that? So, and then Hillel HaBavli comes up, and Hillel HaBavli had studied with Shmayev Avtalion. The word in the Gemara is Shimesh, meaning he didn't only study with them, but he like served under them and learned everything they knew, basically, and absorbed all their knowledge. And so the B'nai B'Teira here, Hillel HaBavli is here, and he knows and he learned from them this tradition about whether the Pesach sacrifice is Dochet Shabbat. So he comes in and he says, yes, it is, and he gives them a verse, and he says, it's also a Kal V'Chomer, just like the regular daily sacrifice, which doesn't get a karet if you neglect it, pushes aside Shabbat, so to the Pesach, which you would get a karet for not doing on purpose, and whatever. He proves it to them. And they make him the head of the Sanhedrin. And he starts to, the phrase in the Gemara is mikantaran bidvarim. He started to taunt them a little bit. It's unclear why. The most charitable version, I think, would be that he wanted them to understand where they had gone wrong. He wanted them to improve, because what he said to them was, what caused me to be the one to come from Bavel, which was an educational backwater at the time. In Hillel's time, Bavel really had very little Torah. It's only later in Jewish history that Rav moves from Israel to Bavel, and then Shmuel's already there, and between the two of them, it seems like they made Bavel into a thriving Torah center, but that's a few hundred years, maybe a couple hundred, maybe two, around 150-200 years after Hillel's time. So he says, what led to this, that I'm the one coming from this backwater? Ella, so he says, it was your lazy, because you didn't work with these great Torah scholars, Shmaya and Avtalion. It's an interesting topic of its own, the question of how we do and don't ignore Torah scholars right near us and lose opportunities to learn from them because we don't make every effort to be around them. And I'm not saying I think I do it as much as anybody else does it, and I think it's a problem, and I feel bad about it. And that's what Hillel's saying to them. I made sure to go and serve with Shmaya and Avtalion. You didn't, and that's why I'm here, and you're not there. But the Gemara then seems to imply that this wasn't the greatest thing for Hillel to do, because the next line of the Gemara is, so they said to him, okay, and what's the halacha if you forgot to bring the knife with you? So there's no knives in the Beit HaMikdash and on Shabbat itself, and what are you going to do about it? So that's a fundamental practical question. How are you going to get the knives? Because if there's no Eruv, there's no way to carry on Shabbat. How are you going to get it from one place to the other? And he says, I learned that halacha. I know that, but I forgot it. Now, it seems to me, I could be wrong, but it seems to me that in this Gemara, there is a bit of a suggestion that Hillel went a little bit too far in his dealings with the B'nai B'Teira and making them feel bad about the fact that they had lost out on the leadership, because the trope, it's a word, and it's the right word, but I don't love using it. It's not a word that people generally use, but the idea that somebody does something where they take too much credit and they lose it, because they took too much credit, that's to come from before too. You have it with Bilam, who claims to greater levels of prophecy than he seems to have, and then he's shown that he doesn't have prophecy. Yet with Moshe, gets angry. That's not quite the same thing, as he gets angry, not that he claims power. But there is a Rashi that points out that Moshe Rabbeinu said to the early judges, to the Zekanim, or the judges, he says to them, you do the easy stuff, whatever the hard stuff is, come to me. And that, as punishment, he later forgot. So that would be a sort of the model of what's going on here. If we get too taken with ourselves, the Gemara seems to be implying, then we forget something. But this is the part that Herzog was pointing to. So when Hillel's face is that he forgot the situation, he says, you know what? Let's watch what the Jewish people do. And here's the phrase, if they're not prophets themselves, B'nai Nevi'im hey, but they come from prophets. They're prophets in the Jewish lineage. And therefore, Hillel seems to say, by virtue of the prophet's Jewish lineage, Jews have sort of an intuition for how to keep the Torah and keep halacha in the right way. Now, what exactly this means is certainly open to lots of avenues of interpretation. You could say it really means that they have latent tradition that they've never fully forgotten, but it looks like prophecy because they don't even know why they're doing it. It could be that you really think it means that prophecy is not a zero-sum game. You're either a prophet or you're not, so that even though later generations weren't themselves worthy of being prophets, but the skills of prophecy stuck with them as a people, and therefore it comes out. It could be there's lots of ways to understand what Hillel means. But in any case, in this particular case, well, the next day, the 14th of Nisan, he doesn't know what you're going to do, and he goes and he looks at what people are doing, and it turns out that depending on what kind of animal they were bringing, the people found a way to bring a knife by having the animal wear it in some way, depending on what kind of animal, where the animal would wear it. But that's the basic solution he came up with, and then he sees it, and he says, oh, that's true. He was reminded of it. I see that's the halacha, and that's actually the tradition I got from Shmaya Naftayat. So Rav Herzog is invoking this story clearly to say that he wasn't quite sure what to do about Purim on the 50th, when the Yerushalayim should keep Purim that year, when they no longer had Jews living in Yerushalayim. And she looked what the Jews did, and that's probably the right answer, and they kept it on the 15th. Now, to me, that raises all sorts of interesting issues that aren't exactly directly related to this tshuva, but the question of when we do or don't trust the Jewish people because they're, if not Nevi'im, they're B'nai Nevi'im, and how we take that and how we allow that to guide us or not guide us, that's a very interesting question, right? By that standard, you could say, well, if I see all of the Jewish people who, you know, eat milchix out, let's say, and that's what the Jewish people are doing, then maybe I should just say, okay, it's okay. Or if they dress, you know, let's suppose that, you know, you're living in a place where it seems like the Jewish people are not dressing in appropriate ways, and you say, well, if they're not Nevi'im, they're B'nai Nevi'im, right? Or, you know, they're intermarrying. Nobody would ever say if they're, you see the Jewish people are intermarrying, 50% of the Jewish people are intermarrying, well, if they're not prophets, then they're sons of Russ. So it's clearly not the kind of an idea one can invoke and one can rely upon all the time. I think here it must be that Rav Herzog means that by virtue of the fact they've been living here for all these years, they must have an instinct for it. Even then, it's an odd thing to me to say, and I would have loved to have the opportunity to ask Rav Herzog about it, because those Jews living in Yerushalayim had never lived in Yerushalayim when all the rest of the Jews had been kicked out of the old city, since they no longer had a city near them that had Jews in it. In any case, that's what he invokes. And then he says, I think it's also a little bit of a matter of danger to try to change it, because communication wasn't so great. So if you tried to change it, you might have gotten people in trouble. They would have gone the wrong time. They would have been out when they shouldn't have been. There would have been all sorts of issues that would come up. And therefore, he thought that it was necessary for those reasons not to change it. Also, that helped not to change it. Now, there was going to be a big meeting, like right around the time of Purim, decide when Purim was going to be. And he says, about an hour before the meeting, I started looking into it, and then the paper started calling. And I think the paper started calling probably to find out when are the Jews keeping Purim in Yerushalayim this year, and I didn't have time to really look at the Mishnah carefully. So now I'm looking at it. So now that I'm looking at it, he thinks that Rav Pesach Frank was right, completely right. So here's the question that comes up, and here's the issues. And this is not the way Rav Yaakov Kellums had tried to deal with it. The Mishnah Berurah writes, says Rav Herzog, that if a city, a walled city, was shamem, was desolate, and then a nearby town would have to read on the 14th. So if, God forbid, Yerushalayim had been emptied of all people, then clearly the new city would not be able to read as a adjunct of an Ir HaMukaf Chama, of a walled city, because that walled city is not currently settled, right? So the status of the new city of Yerushalayim as a city that reads on the 15th is dependent upon the fact that the old city has people in it. Says that's one thing in the Mishnah Berurah. And then he also says, the Mishnah Berurah, that if the krach is na'aseh shel akum, that if a city, a walled city, becomes the property of non-Jews, of idolaters, but mainly of non-Jews, then if a Jew happens to go in there on the 15th, for Purim, he'll read on the 15th. That's one rule. And since some people, the people who are in it, would read on the 15th, then the nearby towns would also read it on the 15th. But if there's no Jew in there, since there's nobody actually reading on the 15th in that city, then you don't read outside of it on the 15th either. That's what the Mishnah Berurah says. Now, the Rav Kellum seems to have taken it, and others seem to have taken it as these are two separate scenarios in the Mishnah Berurah. Scenario number one is a city becomes desolate. City's desolate, there's nobody there, then it can't count as a city to help the nearby cities read on the 15. Then a second option seems to be in the Mishnah Berurah, second issue in the Mishnah Berurah seems to see, be that if a city is full of non-Jews, this is what Rav Kelms had said, that, well, outside of Israel, we don't do it this way, so outside of Israel, why would we do it this way in Israel? That if it's majority non-Jews, then if a Jew goes in and is reading inside the city on the 15th, then the nearby towns can read on the 15th. But if there's no Jew inside that walled city, then the nearby towns wouldn't do it either. That's the way the Mishnah Berurah reads originally. But Rav Herzog is not ready to accept that reading without some consideration. He says he thinks the way to read the Mishnah Berurah is that these two conditions actually go together. A city that was laid waste and then became belonged to non-Jews, which he says it must be that it was destroyed. But if the Jews left, or even if they were expelled, and then non-Jews came in, he doesn't think that changes the status of the city. Now, part of Rav Kelm's argument is, well, how could Israel be any worse than outside of Israel? Because in outside of Israel, all these cities are majority non-Jews. And the truth is, that's true, that's so true, that it seems to be getting the way of Rav Kelm's argument, because then how could this halacha ever have been? Because almost all the walled cities, if not all the walled cities that we might think go back to the time of Yoshua ben Nun, are majority non-Jews outside of Israel. So if you're going to have this halacha that comes from Yerushalmi, it would seem to be halacha that's specifically about Israel. In any case, Rav Herzog doesn't go step by step with what Rav Kelm said. He just gives us Rav Kelm's tshuva, which I excerpted in great brevity, and I didn't go into all the issues. And then he gives us his understanding that he thinks the Mishnah Berurah is giving us two connected conditions, two connected premises, not two separate issues. Rav Herzog points out, by the way, in the time of Chashverosh, Shushan itself wasn't majority Jewish, so it's odd, that's why he thinks it would be odd for the Mishnah Berurah to claim that if it's a majority non-Jewish city, or if it's all non-Jewish city, that that has a problem here, because he thinks Shushan didn't have that problem. So his point is, Rav Herzog's point is, that he thinks that the cities outside of Israel, also that were around the time of Yoshua ben Nun, of course they were belonging to non-Jews, and there's no reason, he says, that the fact that something is majority non-Jews would get rid of its status as a krach, as a large city, right? Yerushalayim for a long, long time was majority non-Jews, and even now, in 1949, it seems that the only status would be that as long as the krach wasn't desolate. So even if you want to say, and he doesn't want to say that, but even if you were going to say that all the Jews leaving was a sign of it being desolate, but that still makes it true that for a long time it was majority non-Jewish, and yet we didn't treat it as desolate. We didn't say that the new city of Yerushalayim, the outside the wall city of Yerushalayim, couldn't read on the 15th because of that, even though it was mostly non-Jewish. And now that it's all non-Jewish, nobody would say that if a Jew goes in there, he can't read on the 15th. That's the halacha. If you go in there, you can read on the 15th, and then the nearby ones can do it as well. So what was the Mishnah Berurah talking about, says Rav Herzog? The Mishnah Berurah was talking about if it was completely destroyed, then it loses its status as having been settled. And once it loses its status as having been settled, and then it becomes a belonging to, completely to non-Jews, that's what that Yerushalmi was talking about. And that's what the Yerushalmi said. In such a situation, the Jews would only be able to read on the 15th if a Jew went in and read on the 15th because he's inside the walls. And in that situation, others nearby could read it as well. But other than that, it has been sort of destroyed and reconstructed. And in the reconstruction to become a completely non-Jewish city, that would take away its status having been an Ir Mukevet Choma, a krach, for the purposes of Purim that would read on the 15th. Then he notes that that's all in the Mishnah Berurah, but if you look at the Vilna Gaon in his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, he doesn't seem to say that. He seems to have a different reading of it. It's not a particular purpose. His reading seems to be that when the city is standing and the people who round it read, don't read because of the Choma, they read because of the Jews inside. So it's when there are Jews inside that you read it, and that would be a special halacha in the halachas of Purim. So instead, however, he gets to the Vilna Gaon, thinks that no, that the outside villages would read on the 15th even if it was desolate, because the point is that it's near a city that has a wall, and therefore that would be what does it. It seems to be that's what he's saying. Then the Vilna Gaon raises another issue. It says that would seem to suggest, by the way, this whole discussion would seem to suggest that there's a halacha in regular cities, not walled cities, that you need batlanim for the purposes of, there's a whole discussion about big cities being able to read on days other than the 14th for the villagers who come in. Maybe the villagers can read in their own village. Maybe when they come in, they can read on days before that so that they don't have to come in twice. So that around Purim time, they come in for market day, their regular market day. And afterward, by coming in again to hear the Megillah read. And that is connected to halacha of Asara Batanim, of needing 10 people who are just sort of around, whose job it is to drop everything else and be involved in communal needs as they come up, and you need batlanim. So the Vilna Gaon says, there's a Tosfot in Megillah that says that for a krach, you don't need batlanim. For a city that has walls, in order to establish it as a city that has walls, you don't need batlanim. You don't need these people who are sort of waiting around for communal needs to arise. The reason the Vilna Gaon thinks that comes out of this discussion is, the Vilna Gaon says our discussion supports that idea in the Tosfos, because we're saying that if a Jew goes into this desolated city that's now been settled by non-Jews, according to the Vilna Gaon, or according to the Mishnah Berurah, that it didn't become desolate, he goes in, he reads on the 15th, so it's hard to imagine if he's the only Jew in town, and there are also batlanim in the town. So the Vilna Gaon says that shows you that this issue, you could claim that shows you this issue doesn't come up when it's talking about a walled city, but he says no, that it couldn't, that maybe it just means, and this is not the easiest way to read it, doesn't mean it was completely desolate or that it became completely that of non-Jews, it means it still left the 10, but it doesn't seem that way. In the end, though, all of this is not necessary for the halacha that we're talking about, for the question of the new city, because the old city wasn't desolate at the time, right? And that's what the Herzog had said, that he thinks, he understands the Yerushalmi is talking about where it became desolate, completely destroyed, and then non-Jews took it over. But in this case, it was never desolate, it was always settled. There were a lot of Jews in it, they got kicked out by the non-Jews, but that's not the same thing. Also, another interesting idea that Rav Herzog brings to bear on this question. He says that Yerushalayim itself, he thinks, is also an exception. It's an exception because we have a principle. The Rambam enunciates a principle that I wasn't sure that everybody agrees to. The Rambam says it, and lots of people discuss it because it's so interesting a concept. But the Rav Herzog is taking it for granted that this is also just the settled halacha, at least in this context. And he's saying that Yerushalayim, all of these rules wouldn't apply to it, would always be considered settled, such that not only would you read on the 15th if you're in Yerushalayim, but that the city, that the any of the towns, any settlements nearby Yerushalayim read on the 15th, because there would the halacha of Kala Samech Kala Nira, which is near, that which is seen, would always apply to Yerushalayim, because it never loses its status as a walled city. Why would I think that? So the Rambam has this halacha in the 6th chapter of the laws of the Beit HaBetira, the laws of the Beit HaMikdash, the 14th chapter, that the sanctity of Jerusalem lasts forever. So, Rav Herzog is jumping to say that means not only the sanctity of Jerusalem in large, in general terms, he means it in terms of the issues of sanctity for things like, is Har HaBayit still considered sanctified? There are certain things that you can only do in Yerushalayim because it counts as Yerushalayim, right? Those kinds of sanctity. But Rav Herzog is assuming that it means the sanctity of the walls as well, is considered to be a walled city still for the Purim purposes. Now, the reason why the Rambam says it because the reason the Rambam gives is because the Yerushalayim is the place from the beginning of the Beit HaMikdash, or the first Beit HaMikdash, the Yerushalayim is the place that the Divine Presence chose to enshrine itself, and once the Divine Presence is enshrined, it never goes away. That's the way the Rambam says it, and therefore it always lasts. But now Rav Herzog is saying, and that must be true of the Purim question as well, and he says for sure in Rambam's time, most of the city was non-Jewish, if there were any Jews living in Yerushalayim at the time. And the Rambam said there's no way that non-Jews remove that Kedusha. I would only say that the thing that's a question is whether that counts for the issue of Mekevet Choma Yishu Ben Nun as the Purim issue comes up. As we saw yesterday, there's always a question when you're going to apply halachos from one area to another area, are they really parallel or comparable areas. Now, if you remember, the Vilna Gaon had known that there were people who held, no, you need Batlanim, and you need Batlanim even in Mukhevat Choma, and then Yerushalayim had a problem, and therefore he had said, well, maybe they did have Batlanim, we just don't know about it, when they talked about the fact that all the Jews were kicked out immediately. All the Jews. So, according to that opinion, you'd have to say that even though the sanctity of the wall stays, the sanctity of Yerushalayim stays, but you can't read inside of it on the 15th because you don't have the requisite number of Batlanim, of Jews whose job is to be ready to take care of communal issues that arise. So he says, maybe, Rav Herzing now says, well, maybe not. Maybe you don't need to, maybe even those who hold, you need 10 batlanim to qualify as an Ir Mukefet Chomah, to qualify as a walled city for the purpose of reading on the 15th. Maybe they would agree that Yerushalayim is an exception for another reason, or a similar reason. Because maybe the whole reason that you needed 10 batlanim was to establish that a city had a certain level of importance. So you had villages, the ones that went into town, to the big city for market. You had the big cities that were the marketplaces, and they were the ones who would read always on the 14th for themselves, but maybe were allowed to have earlier readings for the people coming in from the villagers. So the big cities, and those big cities needed 10 batlanim, 10 people who just stay do nothing for the purpose of being around for communal issues that arise. They're just available to do whatever needs to be done. Maybe that halacha applies to Mukafat Choma as well, to walled city as well, is that they read on the 15th, but only if they have these 10 batlanim, so that they can be seen to be an important center of Judaism, because they have an established communal structure that will allow for communal needs to be taken care of, because they have people ready always to undertake these things. So Rav Herzog says, so if that's the principle of 10 batlanim, of why you need these 10 people, it could be that the presence of the divine, as the Rambam has it, that the Shekhinah never leaves Yerushalayim, because once the Shekhinah comes somewhere, it doesn't leave, because the Rambam just thinks that, but the Rambam also thinks that because there's not a lot of change to a Kaddish Baruch Hu, so once a Kaddish Baruch Hu, whatever it means, that the divine presence became enshrined in Yerushalayim, it would never go away, maybe that can substitute for the 10 batlanim, and therefore it would be considered Ir Mukefet Chomah, even if there are no Jews living inside it, even if you don't have the 10 batlanim themselves, because the importance of Yerushalayim would do it. But in any case, it says Rav Herzog, we happen to paskin in Shulchan Aruch that we don't need these 10 batlanim, so that's all just for the discussion of it, about what it is. It leaves us with an important reminder about the nature of Yerushalayim and the importance of Yerushalayim, that it can stem from the presence of the divine that's always there, whether or not we can sense it, but it's always there ever since the time of the beginning of the first Beit HaMikdash, and that would be why Yerushalayim, even if it lost all its Jews, or even when it had lost all its Jews, it would not seem to affect its status as an Ir Mukefet Chomah. Once that halakha is in the Shulchan Aruch, he says, and this becomes an interesting sort of programmatic statement that's relevant to this psak, but it can come up in other contexts as well. He says, if you're going to come back and say, well, anything that's in the Shulchan Aruch, we can rethink it. Right? Shulchan Aruch says, in a walled city, doesn't need these 10 batlanim, these 10 people who are just available for communal needs. Maybe we should talk about that, because it's a complicated halakhic topic, and maybe we should review it and see it. So, and there are other opinions about it. So if Herzog comes to say he doesn't think so, now this is a really important topic as to the level to which we do or don't say we have to follow the Shulchan Aruch. I remember Rav Binyamin Tibori, who deserves and needs a refuah, or I would weigh it on deserves, who I hope and many hope receives a refuah shleima Bikarov, a very quick and speedy full recovery, told me he once had a conversation with Rav Amital Zecher Tzadik Livracha about some issue that came up, and Rav Amital passed in a certain way, and Rav Tibori said to him, but doesn't the Shulchan Aruch say whatever, whatever, whatever? Rav Amital said something along the lines of, Atah mefacheh min haShulchan Aruch, you're just afraid of the Shulchan Aruch. So that's a big question among important Torah scholars as to the level to which we think that if it's written the Shulchan Aruch, it's not to be argued again. There's a principle in the Supreme Court law, I think, of stare decisis. If I get it wrong, please write to me, grothst@gmail.com. But stare decisis, once something is decided, you can't relitigate it all the time. There are times when courts overturn precedents, but that's on special occasions that comes up. You don't relitigate every topic. It's decided law until it changes for some reason and in some way. So here too, says Rav Herzog, lahavdil, because we're dealing with halacha and with matters of sanctity, but he says we don't go and relitigate all the things in the Shulchan Aruch. We don't recheck of them, even if there are other opinions, because then we would never be able to paskin anything. So therefore, it comes out that the question of Yerushalmi doesn't come up to Yerushalayim, that the non-Jews living in Yerushalayim don't remove its sanctity, and therefore, with all the things that it's gone through before, it shows that, first of all, that that Har Tzion was inside the walls, and that has Jews. That was in one way to help it, or it was inside the original wall of Yerushalayim, and it had Jews, and therefore it should be okay. And there was a Kabbalah of the elders of Jerusalem from the Sfaridim, who were the scholars, that that original Yerushalayim, some part of what we call Mea Shearim was in the original Choma. So all that would help because it would say that even after the Jews were expelled from what we call the Old City of Jerusalem, there were still Jews living in places that were part of the original Jerusalem with the wall, the original wall, and therefore that would help as well. So with all these reasons, Rav Herzog says he thinks we got it right, and then the Jews of the New City of Yerushalayim, even, and God willing, this will never happen again, but even in those years between 48 and 67, when there were no Jews in the Old City because they'd been kicked out, even in those times, the Jews of the outside of the walls of Yerushalayim were able to read the Megillah on the 15th and celebrate Purim in that way. And that is the conclusion of our third day of Purim issues. This will be the end of our Purim discussions for a while at least. And that is responsive a day for the 16th of Adar. Have a great day.